Welcome to another special crossover edition of All Eyes on Cleveland and the OBR Film Breakdown. I am Brad Ward, and the host of All Eyes on Cleveland, and the host of the OBR Film Breakdown is Jake Burns, the great Jake Burns. He's right here with me. How we doing, Jake?
Hey, I'm great, Brad. I'm great, man. Just watch the Cavs make a pick of a player whose name I cannot pronounce. I think he's a good shooter, but a little older, and I'm, you know, a little older, just like Andrew Berry's methods. Older is not better in the draft unless you are a really well-defined player. Seems like the kid can shoot, but he cannot create or do any of those really fun things. So I don't know. I got no opinion on this one way or the other. Then he's older. He better be pretty good when he gets into the league right away, right?
Yeah. How tall is he?
6'6". So he's definitely a two guard. He's kind of seems like the opposite of Okoro, where he's a shooter, and they got guys they think can create off the dribble, right? So between Garland and Caris LeVert, and I don't know if LeVert will be back, but guys who can create off the dribble a little bit. So they feel like they've needed somebody to fill that shooter role.
Makes me wonder what they want to do with Sexton. Them taking another two guard type. You know, I that's interesting. Something to think about.
We know nothing though. You're not coming to this podcast for Brad and Jake's NBA thoughts, but we held out to see the pick. We'll see if any trades transpire off of that. But for now, that's what we know.
Yeah. An eventful week here, Jake. An eventful week. Let's talk real quickly. Deshaun Watson settles 20 of 24 cases. We talked right after the press conference, me and you did. Remember that? We did that React show right after the press conference. And, it was the first time, really, I talked on the subject, you know what I mean? But I just, if you remember, I asking you that night, like, isn't there some value in just moving on from this thing? And yep. I just think it got to the point, Jake, where it just wasn't really feasible anymore. To even if he wanted to clear his name, you're just making it harder on everybody, including himself at that point, I think.
Yeah, I don't, like I've said from the beginning, man, I don't think he's going to clear his name. I mean, even if he wins civil cases, I still think people are going to continue to say what they say about him. Like, I think at this stage, and I'm not saying he's guilty or innocent, I'm just saying I really don't see a path to clearing his name. And I think some of that could be what they talked about behind closed doors. And they just said that the only solution here is that the time is the great healer and they need to move on. Like, and I think most people are there. I think even the most ardent people against Deshaun Watson understand that the punishment, at least those who live in the real world here, is that the punishment will be at the maximum a year-long suspension. Well, I have to tell you, he's going to come back and play like 10 more years after that. So even if you do get the luxury where you feel vindicated, and that's fine. Some people are seeking that. They think that's enough. Like, he's going to get suspended for the year. If that's the situation, he's still going to have a lot of football left. So, you know, at this point, I think everybody from every angle is just tired of it. And we all have come to understand that there's going to be no criminal court cases. There's going to be no if you're against Watson, there's no vindication in criminal court. So the civil court stuff it would have been long drawn out. It still could be. There's still four cases here with some women who claim that they will never take a settlement. So we could see some court stuff happen. But for the most part, I think those will eventually settle. And you're just talking about everyone should just move on. The only part when the criminal stuff decided that it wasn't going to happen, the folks down there in the grand juries decided it wasn't going to happen. The only means to what could be if the party is guilty in Watson, the only means for any sort of restitution or whatever is money. And then that money is going to happen with settlements. And again, I think that people misconceive a settlement being an admission of guilt. I don't think that's the case here. I think that the NFL definitely had a hand in pushing this in one direction. There's not a doubt in my mind, the NFL, and this is something that people need to understand in general, is that the suspension process and what the NFL is doing and the NFLPA representing Watson, it is very much a negotiation. They're trying to find happy ground on what the NFL thinks a suspension should be and what Watson is willing to partake in based on what the NFLPA thinks is fair. If they can't come to a happy medium, which today we saw from Jacina Anderson that they did not have any progress in those talks, then there's going to have to be an arbitrator and a decision made, and that's where it's going to end up. And that ending up point is largely the NFL telling Watson, settle these, get it over with. Everybody in this scenario needs to move on. It's the there is no grand answer. If you're seeking a grand guilty or not guilty answer, you're not going to find it. So your right. belief is your belief, and it's just at this point, everybody needs to move on from it and just understand the way the process is with any job for somebody without a background check issue. Like he's going to play. Eventually, he's going to play, and you're probably not going to like it if you're against Watson. If you're for Watson, you probably think he should play sooner. So I don't know. 20 of 24, we'll see if the last four close out. But to me, Brad, it's like it's a first step in the right direction of just let's just get this over with. And, yeah, 100%. You know, we're tired of talking about it. You're tired of listening to us talk about it. And I'm sure that everybody involved, from the females involved in the case to Watson as the defendant, everybody's just tired of it. So if they can get some money out of it and that does some modicum of good for their life, then okay, that's fine too, I guess. I don't know. So there is no winner. I know we said it at the beginning, and I think we go back to that show. Like, there is no winner here. There is nobody who comes out of this a winner. So 100%. Move on, man. We just got to hopefully this gets settled and the decision is made by mid-July and there's a moving on point.
Totally agree. And it would behoove Watson, I think, to maybe not, but to, like, as you mentioned, the Justina Anderson tweet, and I was going to mention that too. I mean, like, this is the NFL's version of, like, a plea agreement, right? Like, so, like, if they can come to some sort of a middle ground that they can live with, I think Watson will be better off if they can negotiate some kind of a equal ground there than if going to an arbitrator, in my personal opinion, to, you know, in the appeals process and all that. I just feel like if they can come to an agreement, I think he's better off. He'll get a better outcome that way, in my opinion. I may be way off, but that's just what it seems like to me. Feels like
it still feels like 8 to 12 is the range. I think it could get gnarly and be a season. Mm-hmm. But again, in the long scope of what I do covering this team, and you do too, Brad, and he's gonna eventually play. I mean, he's gonna eventually play. It's gonna stink to have him miss a whole season for the investment of other players and a lot of things, but the Browns see this window as much longer than 1 year. So yeah, he's going to eventually play, and I just don't know when that will be, but you know, we'll sort that out when the decision gets made. But the conjecture, I think, still should sit 8 to 12, and we'll see if they try to loop it into a full year. And if they do try to do that, what he can do to combat that based on the NFLPA's strong stance they're taking to back him, right, with the representation they have brought in and holding owners under the fire for their missteps and decision making, yeah, and what they've done. So it could get really ugly for the NFL, and I'm sure the NFL doesn't want to see a courtroom either for this. So
yeah,
you know, we'll see, man. But as nothing has changed, you know, the settling of 20 of 24, it has changed, but there's still four looming cases. And even if Deshaun Watson had just four cases, Brad, it would be a big deal. So it cannot be glossed over that, like, it's still four cases out there that are still potentially going to go to a place that nobody wants to go. So when those are settled, that would be a really big step in finishing and kind of putting a you know, zipping the door here all the way, so to say. But until then, I still find it hard to believe the NFL will hand out some sort of finite suspension until those other four are solved. And that means, if that's the case, he could see week one. I don't know. So, but again, I think we're all hoping, Brad, that mid-July this sorts itself out in some sort of final decision. So we'll see.
Yeah, I think we get it here mid-July. And if those were to settle, Jake, I think we could possibly even get it sooner, you know, settle the other four. I mean, the settling of these cases ultimately immediately affects the timeline, I think, somewhat. Yeah. Especially if they close all or settle all of them. And then also the last thing I'll say on it is that, you know, Watson, the NFL came out and basically said this doesn't change anything in our, you know, punitive outcomes or, you know, our process here. Well, I don't believe you. I think that it does help your situation.
I would agree. Yeah, I think it definitely does, in my opinion. So they're going to say what they need to say, but Yeah, it's going to play a factor. And I think the NFL is heavily involved in the decision behind making those settlement decisions. You know, for Watson to continually say, I want to defend my name, defend my name, defend my name. And then, oh, all of a sudden, 20 of 24 are gone. Well, hey, you know, the NFL might be saying this will work out heavily in your favor if you settle these things. So it's just 1 + 1 = 2 thing to me there. I mean, it's not confirmed, but I don't know how else you can really get there out of the blue. This decision was made, so we'll see.
Yeah, he got a push from somewhere, mm-hmm. and it may have been most likely the NFL, maybe a little bit of the Browns too. I don't know, but they did say they were going to stay out of it, but I don't know. Yeah, at this point, they may have had their hand on him too, on his back as well, in my opinion. But
yeah,
all right, let's talk Baker Mayfield real quick, right? So you know, no, there's no market for Baker. Nobody cares. Nobody knows what's going to happen. And then we have minicamp and OTAs, mandatory mini, and all of a sudden we got some interest, right, Jake? Here, the Panthers first, and now what sounds like some serious interest from Seattle. They must have not liked what they saw.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if these two teams are creating leverage. I'm not entirely sure what's going on. Maybe these leaks are coming from like the Brown side. I'm not like there's potential where you try to create leverage, and these leaks that get out to Josina and Aaron Wilson and these people who are sort of on the underbelly of covering the NFL here, not the biggest names in the world, but people who definitely feel like they have a pulse. Is that both teams are still interested in Mayfield, and tonight's case was which Seattle's been more outwardly, I guess, tweeted about being tied to Mayfield recently, and that tonight they confirmed, air quote confirmed, that Mayfield had interest from Seattle and he has interest in Seattle. And there's talk about a deal that would come, like a trade and a potential contract extension or whatever. I don't know, man. I know this could be coming from the Browns to create leverage. I don't know. I know that these two teams continue to make a ton of sense. I could live in a world where both teams saw both of their quarterbacks in camp. And we know Seattle has Drew Lock and Geno Smith. And we know Carolina's Matt Darnold and they brought in Matt Corral, and they could have saw Corral and been like, this isn't going to work. So I think it's in the very realistic realm where both teams saw minicamp OTAs and they're like, we can't put this on the field. So
yeah.
Yeah, listen, I still think Mayfield gets traded. I'm not sure the timeline. I think that there's a really good chance, because the smoke has been growing recently, that he gets traded in July. But the Browns have always been known to play this out to gain leverage. They've been known to have a plan in place because the money they owe him isn't due until the first week. Until we get a final answer on this, which is almost going to be surreal when it happens, because we've been talking about it or thinking about it for so long. It's an annoying thing to talk about, but I still think Seattle or Carolina end up with him before training camp.
Yeah, I 100% agree. It's funny to talk about, like, all of a sudden, though, they're throwing extension out there. Like, that's so crazy. Yeah. Like a week or 2 weeks ago, they didn't want him at all, or supposedly, or whatever. So, just interesting. Things change quickly, right? So, or at least
they could.
The appearance of things, right?
I would probably, if I traded for Mayfield, though, if I believed in him enough to trade for him, I would probably be interested in some sort of contract movement with him. I mean, like, if you were going to take a risk on him, I would do it at his lowest possible value, wouldn't you? I mean, if you think he's a quarterback you can play and is going to be a successful player and thus dealing for him, and he comes in and has a great season, which I think that's going to happen, but it could, you know, there's a way in which you could build that idea here where getting him in, having a heavily incentive laden deal where Mayfield's probably eager to publicly get it out there that he got a contract extension from somebody. You could probably get a ton of team beneficial things built in there to get out of it at certain points. And at that point too, to me, if you waited and he had a great year, you're then paying him. You're in the similar situation to Cleveland, right? So yeah, I could kind of, it's not totally crazy, but I'm glad the Browns aren't making that choice anymore. I'll say that.
For sure. We've had that discussion all too much. Now we're talking about another team having it, so that's okay. That's fine with me.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this. But Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Jake, you've been doing a tremendous series over on the OBR Film Breakdown 2022 audio season preview, breaking down different positions, looking at the season ahead here. We have a couple receivers to look at here tonight, correct?
Yeah, let's talk about Anthony Schwartz and David Bell. So yesterday I did a show with John Colosimo where we talked about Amari Cooper and Donovan Peoples-Jones, and we laid out some thoughts for them and why they're so important. These two guys are also really important. It'll be a lot of AYOs after this. I say that as all you others. It's kind of what this kind of a coaching term, but like we'll talk about those guys over the weekend. But these guys are going to be important of the top four. So we should talk Anthony Schwartz first, a guy some people seem to think has a chance to be cut, and I don't totally disagree. If he is terrible in camp, a terrible in the preseason, there is a cut possibility. I don't think it's going to happen. I think it's far-fetched. Giving him another year makes a ton of sense to me. But when you look back on last year, the data was not all too kind, right? He only had two games with receiving grades above 70. That was Green Bay week 16, where he only hauled in one catch for 5 yards, but it was a touchdown. And then his week one, just weirdly high-volume target situation, where he got five targets and three catches for 69 yards. Nice. So I don't know, man. He is a man of mystery. He has an obvious trait that should be enough to keep him around most rosters. It wasn't good enough to really flash. The speed stuff did not flash last year. He did some return game. I'll have to look at that real quick to see what he did in terms of the number of punt and kick returns that he had. I think he had some kick return opportunities. He did.
36 15. Kick returns, 11 punt returns. Am I wrong?
According to Pro Football Focus, he did not have a punt return because those went to Felton, but he had 15 kick returns for 322 yards, a 21.5 average. Did he get the gnarly concussion on a kickoff return against New England? I think that's where he got a pretty bad concussion. So I don't know. I mean, they could run him out as a kick returner, but I talked about this with Felton on punt returns. It feels like those are going to be manned by Jakeem Grant, both of those. So I think that opportunity starts to fade away. Other special teams that he was a part of, not really much else. He only had 11 punt return snaps as a outside wall off defender. He had two punt coverage snaps, I think, as a gunner, but that's really about it. He was not heavily involved in special teams the way I thought he might have been outside of returning them. Otherwise, he had go ahead.
Those were snaps I was referencing before. So when I said punt returns, I was looking at snaps. So 11 punt return snaps is where I made that mistake. There you go.
It's all good. Yeah, he was not. He just wasn't heavily involved in that stuff. Didn't do any punt returning. Didn't really get involved in a lot of other things I thought he would be to use his speed, which is greatly beneficial. So maybe we see an uptick there this year. I'm not totally sure. He was 13th among 15 qualifiers, and that's receivers in his rookie class. I customized the targets to look at only rookie receivers with 20 targets in the season. So the only two receivers with a lower receiving grade than him as rookie year were Terrace Marshall Jr., the LSU huge letdown for Carolina. They selected him in the second round. And then Bennett Skowronek, I think I'm pronouncing that right. He was a transfer from Northwestern to Notre Dame, and he went to L.A. late. I don't know if he got picked. He did. He was a seventh-round pick. So he was among the worst.
Played in the playoffs, didn't he?
He did. I think he was forced to. Like, Dyami Brown was out in front of him at 12th in the class. Josh Palmer was 11th. Rashad Bateman was 9th. So he's not – it's not a horribly let-down season in terms of, like, there are guys, Rondale Moore and Elijah Moore, that you know, those guys got into the 70s. So it's not really lumping them in. But Schwartz was just not very good. He was not good enough. He was not effective in anything that we thought he would really be effective in. And I kind of found that to be surprising, considering, Brad, how fast we know he is and how I thought he really looked like he belonged in week one. I know there were some little hiccups here and there in that week one performance, but I was like, all right, this guy looks like he belongs. And then he just disappeared, you know, especially after that square in route where he kind of got, I continue to say, if you watch it a million times over, you'll see that ball was so far and inside and high that he had no chance at catching it. People apparently wanted him to do a hero act and jump dive. And maybe his hero act, like a guy, you know, you've ever seen those clips of those guys who do that fake dive when they know they're not going to catch a ball carrier. And it's pretty funny. It looks like somebody pushed the square button on a controller. If he does that, maybe it changes the course of direction of Eric Reed, who returned that interception, and Mayfield ended up tackling him. And maybe that's a gigantic what if in Browns history, but there was no chance that ball was being caught. It was a terrible throw. Anyway, he just wasn't involved much. And he had some opportunities late in the year here and there a little bit, but he wasn't involved much. But we should reiterate, he is on a rookie contract, second year of that rookie contract. So he's not making a ton of money. He's only 21 still. He doesn't turn 22 until September 5th. So that's an element. Obviously, a lot of growth that can potentially be there. And then we're looking at two in his just pure receiving stats, what he did last year. So he went for 22 targets. He had 10 catches, 135 yards, and a touchdown. So we talked about that touchdown was in Green Bay on a little scramble throw for Mayfield. He had 41 snaps in the slot, 128 snaps wide, which I think wide snaps are the thing I think it's going to be for him. He did not catch any of his contested targets. He was 0 for 5 on those last year. He did have one drop. He did have one penalty, but he caught 6 first downs, and he did have a little bit of rushing sprinkled in. They did use him on some of those reverses. He had one carry for 17 yards against Kansas City. But otherwise, he didn't have any real blow-ups. He had 2 for 24 against Green Bay. He took a couple reverses in week 6 and 7 that went for negative yards. So not much in the rushing realm. 39 yards on 6 carries. I think we would all like to see him used on some of that fly sweep and jet sweep stuff and some of those reverses. So I'm kind of looking at this player last year. Is he who you thought he was going to be, or did you think he was going to be a little bit better, Brad?
I mean, I thought he was going to be a little bit better last year. I'm not like, I don't have huge expectations for Anthony Schwartz. I guess I've never been like, I saw the appeal with the speed, but I just have never been a huge fan, Jake, personally. Yeah. I don't have huge expectations for him this year, to be honest. It scares me a little that the Browns appear to be so high on him or are going to need him the way that they do.
Well, what I would say he does well is no secret. I mean, he runs well. So
sure,
if they can push him down the field, give him some deep throw opportunities, then that's a realm where they can use him. But he's got to be able to track the football, haul some of those in, and be trusted as a not trusted, but a defense must feel threatened. You can say, hey, this guy's a speed guy. We're putting him on the outside, and he's going to run the lid off the defense. Well, they won't care. If they know you're not throwing it to him, they don't care. So that's not always possibly an outcome. It's not always a guaranteed outcome of putting a guy outside and letting him run down the field. It's almost a waste of a body. So but that is his true skill. He has to find a way to use the speed. And if that's catching slants, if that's taking more jet fly sweeps, if that's taking some reverse, he has to add value there. It does not appear. And again, you don't sign Jakeem Grant as a returner if you're going to continue to play either Demetric Felton or Anthony Schwartz, because I mean, as a return guy, because that just totally hinders the growth of those players in that realm. So they don't trust him there. They think he's going to be a receiver. I think there's so many things he has to get better at. I think the consistency in route running, I think the consistency of plucking the football with his hands, and I mean, overall, just being a better playmaker in space. I don't know that he forced many missed tackles last year either. I don't see that number in front of me right away, but I don't really think he was a dynamic. Like when he got the football, I didn't notice any level of dynamic. He did not have a missed tackle force. So it's bleak. What we're talking about here is bleak, but we should try to paint the picture on what does bad, good, and great look like? What is progress, right? So he has 135 on 22 targets. If he gets to 40 yards and if he gets to 45 targets, 30 catches, 25, 30 catches, 400 yards, 3 touchdowns, is that a good year? Is that progress for you? Is that what you want to see? Or do you need more from a third-round pick in their second year?
All right. I'll say this. Okay, so we're talking the things he needs to improve on for me, right? Like, we said speed. It's a no-brainer, right? But, like, you mentioned it already. Adjust to the ball in the air, right? Like,
yeah, ball tracking has to get better.
Does not track the ball well, or it needs to get better. And his play strength. He is play strength, right? Like, he gets knocked around. Press coverage is a problem for him a little bit, right, because of his strength. So that's something that he has to improve on. All right, you said I had this written down. I had 30 catches, 450 yards, and 5 touchdowns written as my high.
That's your top end. Getting in the end zone 5 times.
That's okay. My peak performance from Anthony Schwartz this year.
If he has another season like his last. Like if he has another 10 catches or so, plus or minus a few on either side of that number, 150 yards, couple touchdowns. Like it's just not going to work out. You don't see that work out very often. I'm with you. I think if he can get up over like to the 450 mark, get in the end zone 4 or 5 times, have 30 to 35 catches, and then you can look at a year 3 jump as a 23-year-old. I think that would be a nice outcome. He needs to show though, like you said, if he's going to be a downfield route runner, does he have any nuance? Can he hit double moves? Can he create body shielding at the top of those deep route throws? Can he run and track the football 50, 60 yards downfield when it's really difficult to track a football? Does he have those skills? We have not seen them, so we sit here and we have to say he has to get better at them, but some of it still is opportunity, right? He's got to get some of those opportunities. I don't think he had many targets that were deep downfield outside of that Kansas City game. I cannot think of one play action deep throw his direction. So it is also, can he be created in either his earning or Kevin calling those opportunities, right? It's always kind of hard from the outside looking in to know if a guy has garnered that opportunity, right? Why won't they use Schwartz downfield? Well, a coach has to have an idea that that's going to work. You know, you've got to either shown it in practice or in some form or fashion to be given that opportunity. He is the guy on the team that makes the most sense doing it. They did not go get Will Fuller. They did not go get somebody of that ilk. And I think even though Donovan Peoples-Jones is a more natural vertical route runner, he does not carry the burst and flat-out downfield speed that Anthony Schwartz does. So unlocking this downfield stuff to give him – we talk about this all the time, Brad – what's your niche to stay in the NFL? If you're going to last past your rookie contract, you have to have something you do well. And he has to show that he is the guy downfield catching the football that would mean he is going to be that player for a team. That could be Cleveland. That could be another team taking a free agent guess on him like a Breshad Perriman. But that's what he has to do. Like he has to solve, hey, this is what I do well. If he's not going to force a bunch of missed tackles, and like you said, Brad, he doesn't have a great amount of play strength to be able to run through arm tackles. Can he become, and I'm really not saying this, but this is the body type of a DeSean Jackson. That player, and DeSean is awesome. He's so gifted. I'm not comparing them in any way, shape, or form, but it's a similar body type, right?
Very much so.
Similar body type. So if you're going to be that type of guy who's going to win downfield, you have to add route nuance. You have to add some wiggle at the top. You have to be able to add double moves to run away from people. I don't have a ton of other off the top of my head examples of this type of player who is not shifty. He's not a stronger type, but he is a long, lean, not even long. He's 6 foot. He's not 6'3". He's not long. He's just, he's an average height, 180, but he's got to be able to run. And I'm sure some listeners, some names are probably popping to your guy's head, but I don't really have a great off the top of my head comparison, but he has to find a way to unlock that deep portion of the field for him, because it's important for this offense and it's important for his NFL life, Brad.
For sure. So if that was the high end, though, I'll tell you that I'll say this though, Jake. If he got caught 20 balls for 300 yards and scored 3 touchdowns, I would say progress, good. Okay. Like, listen, he just has to be that threat. Like, if they hit him for 3 deep balls that put him in the red zone, one gets in the end zone, he scores on a reverse and or catches a slant. Like, do you know, if he puts together something where they do have to pay attention to him as a threat when he lines up outside, then he's done his job, in my opinion.
Yeah, I would very much agree with that. But to the point, you have to do some of those things before people say, exactly. Oh, there's Schwartz. We have to be aware of him running downfield. So if you want the defense to come out of the huddle and go, where's number 10, you might want to accomplish some of those things. So we'll see. And again, some of these wide receiver things are hard, Brad, because a big portion of why people think the Browns receiving core might be better than what it is on paper is the quarterback play will get better, but we don't know what quarterback will be under center. So some of these projections get dicey about what's good, bad, and ugly for some of these guys. But I think we've pinned down where Schwartz is. He cannot replicate this past season. Getting in the end zone 5 times, getting over 400 yards would be a large step in the right direction. Something in between, like you said, 20 and a couple hundred, 250 would be some sort of better feeling. But at that point, if it's 2 years in and you're 250 and 130, like, it's hard to see that player being anything special for you. So,
I'm with you.
Leave it at that. Let's talk David Bell. David Bell is going to be a big part of this thing. So I think we all know David Bell pretty well by now. I would like to think, right? So he's obviously a very gifted, just pure wide receiver. I think he does a lot of those things, that natural stuff receivers do really well. What he's battling in here, what we're talking about, is the athleticism. It's hard to say what a guy has to get better at as they get into the NFL. We haven't seen them with NFL competition, but I think the picture we paint here is a lot of people have high expectations for Bell, which I'm fine with. I think he has a potential to be a really good player, but you have to remember why he was there at 99. He does not have an elite trait off of athleticism in any form or fashion. He's not a great runner. He does have a decent first 10, so that does allow him, his first 10 yards of the 40-yard dash does allow him to get to a top speed quickly, but his top speed's not great. His agility's not great. His explosion is not great. So he doesn't have anything that pops. But again, these guys that don't have it, they can still be really good. They can still be fine, but there's a lot of nuance to this stuff that we need to see. Will the route running we think is really good translate? Will the ball tracking that I think, Brad, is really strong, will it translate? I tend to think it will. I tend to believe he'll be a pretty good receiver in the NFL. Nothing special, but a really nice part of a wide receiver room, which, for, again, he's picked in the third round, 99. I believe Schwartz went third round above 99. I think he went in the 80s. So, you know, you're kind of flipping a coin here a little bit, but I do like the pure, they went against the grain. They went for a guy who's a football player based on what he did in college, less dynamic athlete, right? So to me, Bell has to, this is not necessarily a what does he do well, what does he have to improve? This is more what does he have to, like, if David Bell is good, he's overcome the athleticism stuff, doesn't stand out all the time. The stuff about pure wide receiver play strength is, and I was pretty surprised when looking at his data, he forced 25 missed tackles as a junior last year. That's a high number. That's the second highest in the college football at the wide receiver position for a minimum of, I think, like 30 targets. It's up there according to Pro Football Focus's data. So does that play strength translate? Can he do those things? If he's not, it's probably the reason he struggles, Brad, I would just think, is purely he can't separate. He's overwhelmed athletically, right? Like, that's the only avenue to him failing, is he can't find separation. He can't find getting guys off of him, either in zone or man. But it's hard for me to envision him not being able to do that, because I've watched limited athletes like Jarvis right in front of our face be able to find some of those things, right?
Exactly. Like his high intelligence, you know, he's got good strength, incredible body control. You know, I was reading a scouting report from, is it Chad Ryder? Ryder? How do you say it?
Reuter? I don't know. Who cares? Yeah. We'll screw up names on this pod left and right. It's no disrespect, Chad.
Yeah. No disrespect, Chad. NFL.com. But, you know, I thought this was very, you know, well said when you watch him, right? Like, so he wins with process over speed.
Yeah.
He has an ability to keep man coverage off balance with rhythmic route running and detailed footwork. While the tape, that's great, right? Like, but he has no fastball, right? He has no twitch. There's no explosion. So he wins with the stuff that Jarvis won with. Like, it's right. It's the nuance. It's the body control. It's the detailed. He works hard. Like, talk about his work ethic, right? Like, he's gonna run precise routes. He's gonna beat people that way. He's very good in college, and you know, so far at least, you know, scouts think that he'll be good against press coverage because of those same things, right? Detailed fundamental aspects of being a wide receiver that he's going to excel at. The problem is, like, when it comes down to just beating somebody with speed, can he separate, right? Can he but I don't think that's what they need him to be is the thing.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I don't think they do. I think they need him to be a complementary player who can face corners that are second corners, right? Not the top end corners, and be able to win with stuff, the little wiggle, the extra step, the extra double plant, the extra little stuff that gets you open. I mean, and I think him with Amari Cooper is going to be a great fit in terms of a guy putting his arm around him and teaching him little stuff that Amari's learned over the years. Not that Amari wasn't a great athlete coming out of Alabama, but like, hey man, this guy's a route technician, and you can spend time with that guy. That definitely is going to help. But I think in terms of the player, it's pretty obvious. I don't think he's going to have catching the football issues. I don't think he's going to have tracking issues. I think the route running and stuff will be fine. I think he'll be where he's supposed to be when he's supposed to be there. It's just a matter of, can his athletic ability be something he's able to overcompensate for? Can he figure out the ways to get open in the NFL? We'll see. That, to me, is going to be something we talk about after the season when we talk about what he has to get better at, what he struggled, what he did well. We're going to have to talk about the athleticism. Either it showed up or it didn't show up. To me, it's pretty cut and dry in that sense.
Yeah. Does it translate? Does it not? I tend to think that it will. I have high expectations for Bell. I'm interested to hear what you think. Like, what's good to you? Good's middle, right? Like, what's a good season for you from him?
He's going to have opportunity, right? So some guys selected in front of him will have less opportunity in my mind. I think if he can get to 650, I think if he can get around, like, you know, I think a pretty good rookie campaign is something around 650, 6-7 touchdowns, get over the 50 catch mark, and prove to us that the athleticism isn't a problem. I mean, a great year, an out-of-this-world year, would be an 8,900 year. I mean, you could see that opportunity giving it him a chance. Not out of this world. I mean, some people have really liked, like, hey, I'll take him for rookie of the year. And if you're going to give a guy like that rookie of the year, it's he's got to produce like that. And he could. Who knows? We got to go to camp and watch him. We got to watch him in the preseason to see if that stuff stands out. But I don't have that expectation for him. Some people do. I don't have that expectation. I think if he's in the 500-600 range, that's a great start. You want to see potential. So hopefully you get some flashes of what he can do after the catch, some of the stuff that's going to create openings. You want to see some of those zoomed-in videos of him one-on-one and making a DB crossover, right? You know, talk about guys in a phone booth. And can you get away from somebody with a move, right? You know, comparing it to basketball. So, that's what you would love to see. To me, a bad year is, I mean, 200-300 yards. If he's athletically overwhelmed, he only gets to the like 25-30 catch mark. He has issues dropping the football a little bit, gets only 200-300. I mean, I'm expecting him to get to 600 yards. Like, that's my threshold for him. I think he should be around that number based on opportunity cost. We'll see if his role is like an immediate starting or an immediate high snap guy. I don't know what that'll look like, but you know, I think most people considered him to be, like we're talking about the Cavs pick tonight earlier, a guy who should be able to step into the NFL and come with very little coaching, but it's just a matter of, yo, does he have it or not? Can he get open at this level or not? And if he can get open, I think there's a real chance for him to have a nice rookie season, which would be in that realm. I mean, he could get crazy, but I don't expect him to. I just would be bummed if he's only a 203, like a Terrace Marshall type. Like if he's that type of player who just never, he didn't have it. He didn't have it. So that would be the low end of that outcome for him. But I don't think so. I think he's going to be like we're talking here, like a 50, 600, six touchdown type of guy, especially if Watson plays half the year.
You know, they talk about, you know, like he's been playing in the slot a lot, right, in camp. And, you know, they want him to fill Jarvis's role, right? Like Jarvis reincarnated. But that's a high that's high expectations from, right? But so it's interesting the numbers you said. I you know, great minds, right? So I had poor season down as 25 catches, 300 yards, 1 to 2 touchdowns. I had good as 45 catches, 500 yards, 3 to 4 touchdowns. And I had great as 65, 750, and 7.
Yeah, I think that's fair, too. I think that's fair, you know. I just would tell people to temper expectations. Some people are going crazy with some of these things. Like, yeah. I don't think he's going to come in. I could be wrong. You could laugh at me, but I don't ever project rookies to come in and just blow up the world. I mean, even first-round guys, I get a little hesitant, you know. But he should be a nice part of this offense. If he's not a nice part of this offense week to week, I'll be pretty surprised by that. I really will. I think he's got every opportunity here, which is different than a lot of other places, and he should be a nice part of it. If he's not, at least, you know, we're looking at this thing 3, 4, 5 games in, we're like, I haven't seen David Bell on the field much at all, then I'd be really concerned. That'd be a problem.
Definitely, he should be a big part of it.
Just because there's not a bunch of growth here, Brad. Like, I don't think there's some gigantic. He's younger, again, to remind people, he is he's 21 and a half, so I guess there could, but I just don't see the athletic profile that tells me there's a ton of growth from this guy there. I think what we see as a rookie at 22, I should take that back, he didn't turn 22 until December 14th. At 21 is going to be, for the most part, what he is. There's some wiggle room there, but that's why people, you wonder, you watch these drafts, you're like, why do people talk age, and why do they talk athleticism? What's everyone for? Well, that's where you just have a large gap for what a player is versus what they could become. If he's a limited athlete, it limits how much growth they can have, right? That's a real thing. If he's older, it also eliminates that. Like Isaiah Weston, the undrafted free agent, which we'll talk about tomorrow. Well, this guy's an elite athlete, but he's 25. He's going to be 25 at the start of the season. It's just the roundabout of athleticism, man, where you, what's the curve? You go up and then you go down. So, Bell is young. That works in his favor, but the athleticism limits the upside some. But the upside he could already be a good player. He could already be a good player. We'll see pretty quickly how that all shakes out.
Yeah, I think it's hard to – because he lacks that explosiveness and it's not something you can teach, right? Like that, you know, with Schwartz, it's like, oh, he's got to work on his play strength. Well, the thing with David Bell – the issue that you say he needs to get better at is not something that he can ever really get better at. It's just raw athleticism that you're born with, right? So, you know, I think your expectations are right on for him for this year. I think he will be a big part of it. If he's not, that's an issue. But I do think at the same time, like, there's a non-zero chance that he could be really, really good right away, like because of that nuance and the body control and the rhythmic route running and the detailed footwork, as Chad said, all translates to the NFL, and all of a sudden you have kind of a hidden gem. I think that's what the Browns hope they got, right?
I would agree with that very much. They need it. They drafted him there because, and again, much like I'll read what Kobe Altman said about their pick tonight, they view the player they selected as a finished product. They think he's a step-in, ready-made player for a team that's close to the playoffs. I think that sounds pretty similar to David Bell. They needed what they thought was a ready-made wide receiver to come in and play for them in this situation because of how the depth chart looked. And that's why I think Bell will have the opportunity to get to 75 targets or so this year. if they run more 11, which I think we're going to see an uptick in 11 personnel. So there you have it. Anthony Schwartz and David Bell, folks. That's what we think of them.
Yes, sir. This has been another outstanding edition of our crossover episodes between the OBR Film Breakdown hosted by Jake Burns and All Eyes on Cleveland with myself, Brad Ward. Any parting thoughts here that you want to leave our listeners with here, Jake?
No. Tell everybody to have a great Friday and a great weekend, and appreciate everybody checking out this podcast wherever you found it, whether that's Brad's channel or my channel. And appreciation to you, Brad, for always being willing to do these shows once a week, man. And I think the rapport has grown, and we're doing okay. I think we're doing okay, brother. Blue Wire, you guys, stick together.
Yes, 100%. Joint collaboration, crossover, All Eyes on Cleveland, the OBR Film Breakdown, like we always do about this time. For Jake Burns, I am Brad Ward. Go Browns.
Go Browns. We're out.